The Boer Case. The Canadian Broadcasting Corporation presents a play by Alan King, based on an historic murder trial which took place in Alberta in the late 1920s. It was a trial in which the skills of a mind reader were used to bring about a confession. The play is part of the series Famous Canadian Trials, produced in the Montreal studios of the CBC. The Boer Case.
On July the 9th, 1928, four persons were murdered on the ranch of Mr. Henry Boer in Alberta. As chief of police at Edmonton, it became my duty to conduct an investigation. By the time of the inquest, we had examined everybody who might be in any way concerned with the murder, followed up every clue, and studied every shred of evidence. It had all proved a complete waste of time. We didn't know who had done the shooting. We hadn't even a theory. In other words, we were baffled. And at the conclusion of the inquest, the coroner's jury could do no better than bring in a verdict of death by shooting by person or persons unknown. They had heard every shred of evidence there was, beginning with that of Constable Olson of Manville, Alberta.
Our office received word that four persons had been killed on a farm belonging to Mr. Henry Boer, about 80 miles from Manville, and I was sent to investigate. I was met by Henry Boer, his son Vernon, and a neighbor named Charles Stevenson, who had been visiting at the time of the shooting. Henry Boer was in a state of shock, but he was able to show me three of the victims.
Who were they, Constable Olson?
Well, the first was Mr. Boer's wife, Rose, who'd apparently been shot as she sat at a table in the dining room. I found three bullet holes in her neck. The second victim was Mr. Boer's elder son, Fred. His body was lying face upwards on the floor of the kitchen, and it appeared that he'd been killed by a bullet in the mouth, which had thrown him backwards. Mr. Boer then led me to a bunkhouse where I found the body of Gabriel Granby, a hired man who'd been shot twice in the head and once in the chest.
What did you do then?
I questioned the three persons present, beginning with Vernon Boer.
I had discovered the bodies.
When was this?
It was about 8 o'clock in the evening.
Where were you?
I was working out in the fields. I heard rifle shots. They seemed to be coming from the house here, so I ran to see what had happened. When I got here, my mother was lying there in the dining room. I knelt down by her body, but she was dead. Then I went through the house and found the others. They were dead, too.
What'd you do then?
Well, I thought I'd better get a doctor, but we haven't a telephone, so I ran to one of the neighbor, and he telephoned for Dr. Heslop.
That's the doctor who's here now?
Yes. He came and... Wait a minute.
What's the matter?
Rogic. I haven't seen him around.
Who's he?
The other hired man. Kind of strange that we haven't seen him. Maybe he was
well,
the one...
Where do you think he might be?
I don't know.
Come on, all of you.
Did you conduct a search for Rozick, Constable?
Yes, sir. We found him in the barn, or rather his body. He'd been shot twice in the head.
What did you do then?
We searched the house and found nothing missing, not even money, so I concluded it was not murder and robbery. Messages were sent to some of the neighbors then. They formed a posse to search for any suspicious strangers. In the meantime, I continued to question the persons at the ranch. I asked Mr. Henry Boer where he was at the time of the shooting.
Well, I was out in the fields.
Surely you must have heard some of the shots.
No. I wish to God I had heard them. But I was working some ways off, up on the northeast part of the east section of the ranch. I heard nothing.
You any idea who might have done the shooting?
No. No, none at all.
Mr. Boer, had your wife... Any enemies that you know of?
Enemies? Oh, no, that couldn't be. Rose was one of the best-loved women in these parts. She was always doing something for the neighbors. Everybody loved her.
All right, Mr. Boer. I know it's pretty hard on you. Just take it easy for a while.
Thank you, Constable.
Mr. Stevenson? Charles Stevenson, is it?
Yes.
Your neighbor, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, now, how did you happen to be on the Boer Ranch at the time?
Well, Henry asked me to come over. He had a new farm equipment catalog. He wanted me to have a look at it and see what I thought about going in with him to buy a new harvester.
Is
That's right, Constable. That's quite right.
Then what did you do, Constable?
Well, about that time, Dr. Heslop had finished his examination, so I asked him to take Henry Boer, Vernon, and Charles Stevenson over to Mr. Stevenson's place to see that they stayed there. Then I sent a message to Edmonton Police Headquarters, and they sent down Detective Leslie and Inspector Longacre.
And they took over, did they?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Constable.
Longacre and Leslie were my men. I sent them down figuring they could clean up the case without me. A few days later, Leslie sent in his report, which was just about the same as the evidence he gave at the inquest.
We tested the entire house for fingerprints. Found a great many.
Were you able to determine whose they were, Mr. Leslie?
Yes, sir. They all belonged either to members of the Boer family or to the hired hands.
What other investigations did you make?
Well, first of all, we searched for either a revolver or a rifle, but we were unable to find one anywhere. And the strangest thing of all was that not only were there no shells, there were no bullets to be found either.
You mean that the bullets that had killed the victims were not there?
That's right, sir. The killer must have gone over the house carefully and picked up every bullet and shell that had been fired. At least all except one. We did find one.
And where was that?
Well, it was lying in some dirty water in a dishpan. We couldn't determine how it got there, but obviously the murderer overlooked it. It was hard to see.
Can you say what kind of a bullet it was?
Yes, sir. It had been fired from a .303 rifle. We tested it for fingerprints, but there weren't any. We made a new search for the rifle it might have been fired from, but well, all we found was an old shotgun and a .22, and they obviously hadn't been fired recently.
No .303?
No, sir. When we found the bullet, we asked if anyone owned a .303. Mr. Stevenson said he did.
That is Charles Stevenson, the neighbor who was there?
Yes, sir. Well, when he told me that, I asked him where the rifle was, but he said it was missing. I asked him to explain, and he said that while he had been in church the previous Sunday, the rifle had disappeared from his house.
And then you continued your investigations, did you?
Yes, sir, as far as I could. We were unable to find any further evidence that pointed in any way to the three persons who were on the farm that day. Mr. Boer Sr., Vernon Boer, or Charles Stevenson. And finally, Inspector Longacre and I went back to Edmonton, made our report to Chief Gear.
Very well. Thank you, Detective Leslie.
Yes, sir.
Call Dr. Heslop.
Dr. Heslop described what he had found, the nature of the wounds and so on, and was pretty well able to fix the various times of death.
Mrs. Boer appears to have been the first victim. She was shot at the table where she was sitting, cleaning strawberries. Her son Fred was killed next, probably when he started towards the dining room after hearing the shots.
And the two hired men, Rossett and Crombie, were they killed at the same time, Doctor?
No. As far as I could estimate, Rossett was killed about half an hour after the other two, and Crombie about 2 hours later. This would agree with the evidence already given by some of the neighbors who say they heard shots about those times. That is to say, about 6:30 and 8 o'clock.
Thank you, Doctor.
The trouble was that none of the neighbors who heard the shots paid any attention to them. There was usually someone out hunting, and the sound of shooting was quite common. After Dr. Heslop gave his evidence and was followed by some of the neighbors, Vernon Boer was called to the stand.
Mr. Boer, you heard the evidence of Robert Scott, did you?
Yes, sir.
He stated that he had driven down the road which passes your ranch about 6:30... and that he stopped to talk to you. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. We were talking about various things, and then Roger came up and asked me what other chores were to be done that evening.
And what did you tell him?
I told him to go over the barn and feed the pigs.
What have you to say about hearing any shots?
Well, I think I did hear some shots about 8 o'clock, but I didn't pay any attention to them. I thought maybe it was a tractor backfiring or someone shooting at a fox, maybe Charlie Stevenson.
You didn't trouble to find out what they were?
No, sir. On the farm, you hear shooting all the time.
Yes. All right, Mr. Boer. Call Charles Stevenson. Mr. Stevenson, you told the police, I believe, that you had a .303 rifle.
Yes, sir.
But it disappeared.
Yes, sir. I don't know what happened, except that it must have been stolen.
Have you any idea when?
Well, like I told the police, I figure it was taken on the Sunday before the shooting, while I was in church. I know it was there when I put on my church clothes, and it was missing when I came home and took them off.
Did you report it?
No, sir.
Why not?
Because I thought someone might have just borrowed it.
Borrowed it?
Yes, sir. If I needed a gun, I wouldn't think twice about borrowing a friend's. It's the custom around here.
Then the coroner asked Henry Boer and Vernon Boer where they were on that particular Sunday, and they both said they were in church and that they didn't know anything about Stevenson's rifle. And that's about all the evidence there was. The coroner's jury went out and deliberated, and the best they could do was to come back with the verdict that it was murder by a person or persons unknown. And I tell you, it didn't make us policemen feel very good. The shooting of four people like that on a farm shouldn't have been so hard to solve. It wasn't as if the murderer could get lost among thousands of people the way he could in a city. But there it was. There was nothing else we could do. Nothing in reason, that is. Everything that happened after that inquest was it was as unreasonable as the weirdest flights of fancy in some book of detective fiction. And I started it against my own common sense. All during that inquest, there was a man sitting there that I had persuaded to stop off on his way to the Arctic to study the mentality of the Eskimos. His name was Dr. Maximilian Langsner, originally from Vienna. And I heard about him because of something he did in Vancouver